Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, April 10th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney in my home studio in New York. Taylor Schwenk is producing from his home studio in Connecticut. Today, a great conversation with Nationals manager Davey Martinez, world champion manager Davey Martinez, who has some tremendous stories from Washington's run, including an admission of one big play he didn't actually see, and the memento request he really wants, and how he's filling his downtime in a really surprising way. Todd Radom, our chief executive of our weekly quiz, will be here this week and talk about the Braves' Truist Park. Speaking of downtime, there's a lot of skepticism about the so-called Arizona plan in an ESPN.com piece published today with voices gathered by Aldin Gonzalez, Jesse Rogers, and June Lee. These are a couple that jumped out. An American League starting pitcher, quoted anonymously, says, "I want us to be part of the solution, not the problem. I miss baseball and I want to play baseball. When I think about being isolated for 4 to 5 months without being able to see my family, I don't think that would go through at all personally." Another player, a pitcher, union rep, said, "Look, I'm not saying this wouldn't be a positive. I love baseball. I want to play baseball. But if it's not safe for us to be anywhere off the field except for a hotel, then it's probably not safe to play games. I get it. I want to play too. You can want whatever you want, but that doesn't mean it can happen." June Lee was on the podcast yesterday talking about the possibility of players doing something formal with video games. And today he reports that in a joint effort with the Major League Baseball Players Association and Sony Interactive Entertainment, Major League Baseball is launching the first competitive MLB The Show League, featuring players from all 30 teams competing in a 29-game regular season. The regular season begins Friday and will last through April 28th. According to a poll generated by Seton Hall University, sports fans won't attend games. A lot of sports fans won't attend games without a coronavirus vaccine being in place. According to the poll, 72% of fans are feeling that way at this point. Dave Martinez is the manager of the Washington Nationals. But what I learned just before we started this interview, Davey, is that you are also a carpenter, which I didn't know about. How the heck did that happen?
You know what? I try to be hands-on as much as I can. It's actually killing time right now. You know, I had all this, had a new home built, and I just been working on doing closets, putting up new blinds, whatever I can do myself. Not by any means can I go out and build somebody a new house, but I can put some nails in the wall.
So when did you learn how to do that? Before we get to your championship run of last year, because I tell you what, I mean, I grew up on a farm and I saw a lot of carpentry going on, but I was the gopher. Like, the idea of having the skills to do that, you have to learn that. When did you do that?
I learned that in high school. My dad and my uncle had a construction business, so they taught me how to. I started out at 14 doing roofing, and back in those days, you remember laying roofing, it's all tar and paper and stuff of that nature. And then I graduated into framing and started doing some framing work. So I just learned a little bit each and every time, and now I kind of enjoy it. And like I said, no better way to pass time than just trying to get stuff done.
Yeah, and we got a lot of time now. What other parts of that house are you going to be working on here in the days ahead?
Well, I got a whole lot of yard to take care of. I'm on 350 acres, so I got to take care of a whole lot of yard work and farming and stuff of that nature. But like I said, I'm just trying to pass time. You know, I miss the game, miss being around the boys in the clubhouse, but it keeps my mind going.
Well, if you need someone to help you with either moving a manure pile or, as you said, tar paper, like, that's low enough where I could help you out with that. All right, let's talk about last year and get some stories from you from last year. First off, have you been involved? One of the things that we missed out in the first part of this season is your guys' ring ceremony. Were you involved in any way this spring in picking the championship rings, and what have you heard about them?
No, I heard they're incredible. I didn't want to be involved. I want to accept my ring like everybody else and be surprised when I get it. Obviously, they asked me questions about it, but my understanding is they did a tremendous job. So I'm looking forward to getting it because we will get it soon.
Well, who would have imagined last May 23rd that you guys would have championship rings? Because on that day, you're 19-31, and you and I remember talking to you during the World Series about all the speculation about your job. I know you well enough to know when you said, you know, you weren't worried about that, that's exactly right. But how often were you getting asked by family members and friends about that? Because that speculation was out there.
Yeah, you know, it was definitely out there. You know, my family never really, they're very positive through the whole thing. They just, you know, I talked to my dad and he just said, hey, just do your job, you know, just go out, motivate the players and, focus on just trying to win every inning, you know? And that's where I learned that from. So, friends and stuff, they, you know, they kept telling me hang in there now, you know, I know, it was tough and it looked ugly. But I had a job to do. That's the only way I thought about was, hey, going to the ballpark and focusing on the day at hand and try to win the game on hand.
What, in your mind, was the most important thing with the turnaround that came after May 23rd?
I personally believe one was we started getting healthy. You know, I said this from the beginning when we were struggling. I said, look, if our starting pitching holds up, this could be interesting, you know. So, but the rest of our guys got to get healthy. We got to get our lineup strained out. And then, you know, I relied a lot on the veteran players. I really did on keeping the clubhouse intact and keeping them positive, you know, with me and myself, the coaching staff and the veteran guys. We kept everything intact. We closed everything out from what we heard from the outside and kept it amongst us on the inside.
Who were the players, the veterans who played a role in that?
You know, you had guys like, Howie, Zim, Scherzer, even Strasburg, Corbin, Doolittle, you know, all those guys, you know, and then, you know, Trey and Anthony Rendon, those guys really stepped up when we needed them. You know, Trey, you know, could have easily just shut down, and the guy was coming to the ballpark every day and getting his work in every day and putting in hours and hours and hours to get back as soon as he got back. And you know, needless to say, you know, his finger was still not right when he came back, but he wanted to come back and help us play and help us win.
Gerardo Parra is going to have a special place, I think, in Nationals history because of what took place last year. What did he add after you guys got him?
Oh, when we got him, I mean, he was the guy that kept everybody, you know, full of energy. You know, between him and Sanchez and even Victor Robles, he brings that energy every day. But having Parra come in and the veteran guy that he is and just kind of look around and kind of uplift everybody day in, day out, no matter whether we won or lost. He just go in and just, you know, be himself. I remember days we lost and, you know, all of a sudden I hear the music playing and he's in the clubhouse dancing. And tell the guys, hey, forget about today. We got another game tomorrow. So let's go home. Let's get a good night's sleep and come back and do it again tomorrow.
Well, and that must have appealed to you, Davey, because I've known you a long time. And while, you know, you were brought up at a time when, you know, the phrase old school was predominant, you are such a positive person. That must have really appealed to you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I learned this over the years. You know, I watched, you know, I came up in the 80s, played to the 90s and early 2000s. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from coaches. I learned a lot from other players, managers. But the one guy that I watched, you know, day in and day out was Bobby Costa when I was there with him. And just watch how he reacted to different things. And he was just Mr. Calm. I mean, you know, he protected his players, no doubt about it, as we all know. You know, he got thrown out a lot. But he was very positive, very energetic, always happy. Just want to see guys do well, you know, and I learned that from him. He never, when things were going bad, he never blew up. He just stayed positive and always told everybody, hey, we'll get him tomorrow.
There's a lot of respect among other general managers for Mike Rizzo's ability to complete trades. They feel like he's just adept at making deals. How much was his work in relation to your relief corps important in your eyes?
Oh, he's awesome. I mean, he was on it. I mean, you know, from day one, you know, every day we talk five, six, seven times a day. And, you know, when we need something, you know, he's going to pull the trigger and try to do whatever he can to get the best players he can to help us win. And he was spot on, you know, when he got the guys he got, even though, you know, I know Strickland got hurt and you was hurt and Elias who got hurt. But again, Hudson, in the time that we needed him, was tremendous. But he's always out there. He's always looking. He's always looking to improve our organization. So he's going to do whatever it takes to help us win.
All right. So with 5 days to go in the regular season, you guys clinch a playoff spot in the National League wild card. As you do that, at that time, clearly the Dodgers were regarded as big favorites because they had dominated during the regular season. But in your heart, what was your belief about what was possible as you guys go into the postseason?
So, you know, I thought, you know, we were clicking at the right time. You know, we won 9 games in a row there at the end. And I said, you know, anything can happen. You know, I had a game plan going in to, you know, going into the playoffs in the World Series, starting with the wild card. You know, I talked to Strauss about coming out of the bullpen, and he was game on, all for it, you know. And I just told myself, hey, look, you know, just focus on winning the inning. And these guys will do the rest. They're playing well. They believed in each other. And we'll go from there, and we'll see what happens.
In the top of the eighth inning, you guys are down 3-1 the wild card game with the Brewers. What was the feeling in the dugout at that point?
We need to get something going. their pitching was really good. They really were. And, you know, but I thought, you know, this team never gives up, you know, and I knew that from the beginning. And, you know, I said, you know, 3-1, you know, we've been down a lot more than that and came back. So, you know, I was telling the boys, hey, keep working good at bats, keep pounding, you know, things, you know, we'll get a couple of runs. And so happens that, you know, that bottom of the eighth inning, you know, things worked our way. Ball took a tricky bounce. We were able to score a bunch of runs and take the lead.
Yeah, how daunting was it for them to have Josh Hader sitting out there as dominant as he's been with you guys down a couple runs?
You know, hey, he's one of the best in the game, really. I mean, and he's been lights out for the Brewers for a few years now. So, you know, like I told the boys, hey, just work good at bats. You know, the biggest thing, you know, we told them, I know Kalon spoke to them, is get the ball down the strike zone. You know, stay in the strike zone. You know, he can get wild. So, stay in the strike zone, and the boys did that.
Tell me about what you saw on that play. You made reference to it when the ball goes underneath Grisham's glove in right field.
So, you know, as we all do, you know, not to say that was superstition or anything, but we need to get something going. So I started moving around different places in the dugout, standing in different places. We started getting going. I was on the other side of the dugout, towards first base, and base hit. You know, I know we're going to tie the game. So I look down at my car, you know, and trying to figure out what, you know, what's next, who's going to pitch, who's all of a sudden I hear the crowd. I heard like a second roar of the crowd. When I look up, I saw the right fielder going back, running for the ball. So I all of a sudden became a quick fan and started running down the dugout screaming, run, run. And we scored that run, the third run to go ahead. And then we were all jacked up. Now I had to regroup, focus, and get the guys in there we needed to get to, which we had Hudson up, and I was comfortable with Hudson pitching the night.
So that was one of the pivotal moments of the postseason, and you actually didn't see it when the ball goes underneath Grisham's glove.
I saw the base hit, and I was elated that we were going to tie the game. and all of a sudden, I heard the crowd. And then when I look up, I saw Grisham running back for the ball. And I became, like I said, I really became a fan. I started screaming. You know,
so what was the feeling, Davey, after you win that game? Again, in terms of, because you guys at that point are lined up against the Dodgers, who've been so dominant during the year, but how are you feeling about how this is developing?
Yeah. So we're sitting there, and I'm, you know, after the game, we're all, you know, celebrating. We're excited. And I can remember sitting in my office, and a couple of coaches were in there, and I said, hey, you know, I just sat there, and I said, hey, I said, it's going to get interesting. I said, you know, the boys are feeling it. And, you know, this could be something really special. So, you know, let's keep them fired up, keep them going. Never know, you know, like I said, you know, we're trying to play one inning at a time, one game at a time. But, you know, I really felt like we had something really special with these guys, and they felt it as well.
Now, one of the cool things that I remember you telling me is we're going through the postseason that you were hearing from Bryce Harper, because everyone was wondering how Bryce was feeling watching you guys go through. But you were talking about how Bryce couldn't have been more supportive.
Yeah, he was awesome. He texted me a few times. Hey, good luck, man. You guys got this. Go get him. Believe in you guys, you know, and that made me feel really good. You know, he's a great guy. Great guy. I love him to death. He, you know, everybody knows we had a special relationship when he was here. And I still, to this day, he reached out to me a few weeks ago, making sure that I was healthy, and, you know, did the same to him. But, you know, he really was pulling for us.
I thought, I mean, when you said that, I thought that was one of the classiest things I've heard in baseball, you know, given the position that you were in and him being away for that year.
No, yeah, he's been, you know, like I said, you know, and I've told everybody this, he's one of the best, and he's a professional. He gets it. He understands the game. And, you know, he spent many years there, you know, so, you know, he just felt like, hey, you know, if he can't be in it, then why not us? You know, why not let the Nationals celebrate? And they were, you know, we worked so hard to get to where we were at. And I think he realized that.
All right. Game five, National League Division Series. You guys have been going toe to toe with the Dodgers. Top of the eighth inning. You're down a couple runs, and Clayton Kershaw, future Hall of Famers, on the mound. This is what happened when Anthony Rendon was at the plate. Give a listen.
Rendon in the air to left. Taylor goes back to the wall, and it's gone. Anthony Rendon, a leadoff homer in the eighth, and it is a one-run game.
And, of course, that was Ernie Johnson on TBS. Davey, how you feeling at that moment when Rendon gets you guys started that way?
Yeah, as Rendon did most of the year, I mean, you know, he picked us up a lot all year long. But, yeah, you know, he got us back in the game. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you could feel that energy in our clubhouse again. And you could hear the boys, you know, here we go, let's go, you know. We never quit. We keep going till the end. We play 27 outs as hard as we can go. But they were chanting all kinds of stuff. And then the celebrations, as you know, they love to dance and the race cars and all that stuff. They were pumped up, you know. And then after that, everybody knows what happens, you know. Young kid Juan Soto comes up and hits a ball really, really far.
Yeah, listen to that, David. We got that teed up as well. Give a listen.
Wow, just like that, two pitches, two solo shots, another slider right here.
Oh, let's go!
And Soto was all over this pitch.
Jeff Francoeur chiming in there, and that was, I feel like, is that's going to be one of the parts of the legend of Juan Soto for what he accomplished for you last year. You know, tell me what you saw in him as you guys were making that run last year.
No fear. I mean, this guy, he lives for big moments. He really does. I can remember games, you know, we played the Mets in a series in August, and they had, you know, a packed house. They just got Stroman, and it was loud. I mean, you know, he gets up to his first at bat against Stroman, strikes out, you know, Stroman does a little shimmy, you know, walks off the mound, and Soto, you know, just I could see Soto put his hat and helmet down, he shakes his head, you know, comes back. Next at bat, he gets up there, and I looked at Chip and I said, well, let's see the matchup now. Let's see what happens now. And, man, he hit a ball 400 feet. And he comes to the dugout, and I look at him, he looks at me, and he shimmies to me like Stroman did to him. And he just says, hey, he goes, I got this. And I just laughed.
Davey, I've, you know, in the time I've covered baseball, there's a very small handful of players who I feel like assumed that they were going to prevail. I covered Derek Jeter. I think he always believed he would find a way to win. Mariano Rivera always felt like he was going to prevail. David Ortiz. And I feel like even at a young age, Juan Soto already has that, that he assumes he's going to find a way to win.
He's going to. I mean, that's his mentality. Like I said, the kid has no fear. The way he works at bat, the way he gets into an at bat, you know, after he chases a bad pitch and he understands and how he breaks down each at bat, and makes unboggling for a 20-year-old decision, you know, at bat after at bat, you know, throughout the game. I've never seen, you know, I've been in this game a long time. I've never seen a kid that young be that poised and know the strike zone like he knows it and do the things that he's capable of doing. I mean, he could go 450 feet to right center field and do the same thing in the straightaway left field with the best of them. I mean, you know, I've seen it. Everybody's seen it. Big moments doesn't seem to faze him at all. I mean, he likes it. He enjoys it. He's going to be an unbelievable player. I still believe, and he will even tell you, you know, his goal now is to, you know, to win a Gold Glove, to be a better base runner, steal more bases, you know, to just play the game the way it's supposed to be played. And he tells you that.
Game five continues. You load the bases in the 10th inning, and Howie Kendrick comes to the plate, and this is what happens.
This is deep to center field. Bellinger's back. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick with a 10th inning grand slam to break it open. Wow. It is 7-3, the former Dodger breaking hearts in Los Angeles.
Now, two things jumped out at me from watching that highlight again this morning, Davey. One was the looks of the Dodgers being stunned, because I think they never thought, it never occurred to them, I think, going into the series that they might lose because they were so good all year. And the second thing was Howie, you could see in his face by how he almost started talking as soon as he hit the ball, like he knew he killed that ball. He knew that was gone.
You know, we're in a situation, one out, base is loaded. He hits the ball, and I think to myself, you know, sack fly, here we go. You know, we got the lead. And all of a sudden I'm watching the ball, and the ball goes over the fence. And, you know, we start screaming. The funny thing is Chip had to go to the bathroom so bad. He comes back out. He goes, what happened? I look at him. He goes, grand slam. Because he thought he was just, you know, we took the lead. I said he had a grand slam. And we're jumping up and down. And, I happy for Howie, because, you know, people were, you know, questioning why, you know, I left him in the games. You know, his defense wasn't good. But the reason why I left him in his great game is he showed you right there, man. He's another guy that, you know, in the clutch, you know, all year long. He was a guy that got big hits for us, and he did that day.
Yeah, that's you mentioned Chip Hale. One of your coaches missed it because he was had to go to the bathroom. I hadn't heard that story. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That'll be one to be able to tell people for a long time.
You know, it's one of those moments. Things were happening, everybody, and he had to go, and he set up right back, and sure enough, you know, grand slam, We were just ecstatic. I mean, he was excited. I mean, Chip, man, you know, you talk about somebody with a lot of energy. Chip got a lot of energy.
So, Davey, we'll pick it up in the World Series on that morning when you find out that Max Scherzer's not going to be able to go in Game 5. How are you feeling about that at that point with this World Series tied 2-2?
You know, so I get the phone. I get a text message at 8:00 in the morning. Max woke up. Can't move his neck, can't move his, you know, his shoulder. He's locked up, you know. First thing I thought was, wow. And then I said, okay, here we go. You know, called Paul Menhart, talked to him, said, we need to get a hold of Joe Ross, give him the heads up, he's pitching. You know, he's going to start the game. And Paul's, what do you mean? I said, Max's neck, acted up. So we gave Joe the heads up. Max comes in later on that day. We talked to him, and he's just jacked up. Like I thought, I really believe. I said, you know, this, you know, he's done. He's done for the year. We're, you know, we're not gonna be able to use him. So, you know, we just say had all the confidence in the world. You know, with that being said, I thought Joe did a great job. I really did. You know, two pitches that he wished he had back, but other than that, he pitched really well.
I was with you. I didn't think there was any chance we would see Max. When did you start to get the sense that it was possible he might be able to pitch in game seven?
So the next day, he came in and he was so much better. I mean, really, really better. Now, we got to fly to Houston and we put him in a neck brace. We told him he had to sit in first class. You know, so we try to make sure we take care of him because we don't know. So we get to the ballpark in Houston, we have a workout. You know, we obviously show up late. We do the media. He goes out and he starts playing catch, and he comes over to me and says, "I can go. I think I can go." I said, "No, you don't think. We got to know for sure." He goes, "I'm good. I can go." And so I said, "Okay." You know, I said, "So if you keep improving, you know, you're starting game seven." And he said, "Perfect." He went off to do his max thing, and that's all. That's all I said. You know, I didn't want to talk to him. You know, focus on game six with Strauss, and we'll get to game seven. You know, as far as I was concerned, he was going out there.
Part of you must have just been amazed that he's telling you, "Yeah, I can go."
Yeah, I mean, I watched him. I stood out there and just, I didn't want to stand next to him. I didn't want to make a big deal about him, but I was watching him throw, and man, from the day before, if you would have saw him the day before and the look on his face and the way he was walking around, you thought this guy won't be able to do anything for a month. And all of a sudden he's throwing and I'm like, you know, just what in the world's going on? You know, like, and he's throwing and he's getting it loose and then now he's starting to throw a little harder and I'm saying, wow, this could happen. You know, let's see how he feels, let's see what he says. And he comes over and he says, "He's good." He said, "I can do this." So, you know, that's Max. I mean, Max, you know, his arm would have to fall off, you know, not to pitch game seven.
Well, and you guys create that game seven, you win game six, and he starts game seven. He pitches well. He gives you five innings. Zach Greinke, though, is dealing. Tell me what you saw in him and how you're feeling as you guys go into the top of the seventh inning.
Wow, man, he was lights out. He really was. I mean, we didn't hit very many balls hard off him, you know, and I'm just sitting and he's just, you know, carving, you know, we're trying to figure it out, you know. I mean, he's throwing strikes. He's just motoring, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, here comes Anthony again. And, hits a home run, you know, and gets us back in it. And the guys, I can hear the guys, you know, on the bench, you know, again, you know, this is far from over, you know, we can do this, you know, let's go, you know, and credit to all the guys, man. They pull for each other. They push each other. They wanted it. You know, you can see it. They wanted it. They didn't want it to end with us losing. You know, they wanted to win the game.
And after Greinke walks Juan Soto, who was the only player the whole year that the Astros walked intentionally, Will Harris comes in and Howie Kendrick is at the plate. And this is what happened next. Give a listen.
He struck out 11, walked one, opponent hitting 176 against him. That's down the right field line into the corner. This ball is gone for a home run. Nationals on top. Howie Kendrick. Made it 3-2 off the pole and right.
That was Joe Buck on Fox. You could hear the dugout going absolutely crazy. And Davey, from your perspective, you probably had the perfect look at it.
Yeah, I did. And all I kept saying was, "Please stay fair." you know, it's one of those where, oh no, you know. And yeah, I know there were some guys saying, get down. And I'm just saying, stay fair. When they hit that flagpole, which, by the way, I'm trying to get a piece. I really want a piece of that flagpole. I really do. I've been trying to see if I can get it, but no prevail. But, But man, we were, I was right then and there. I said, all right, man, we still got some baseball to play, but that feels good to take the lead at that moment. That felt really good.
Yeah. So you want to get a piece of the right field foul pole? You'd love to get a piece of that to keep.
I want that piece. Yeah, I told Howie I'd share with him.
Again, Howie Kendrick stepping up in that big moment. What do you remember when you guys win? You guys wind up winning the game. Of course, you're world champions. Did you get a moment with Howie afterward to say anything or have a conversation with him?
No, we just hugged. You know, he knows what we went through all year long. You know, he thanked me for sticking with him. You know, and I thank him for being the leader that he is. But he's just, you know, like I said, he's the voice of our clubhouse, you know, him and them. I mean, you know, when Howie speaks, you know, those guys in that clubhouse, you know, they sit down, they listen. So, for him to do what he did and you know, them, you know, let's not forget about them, which I thought was an unbelievable moment that he gets to hit the first home run, in the World Series, you know. For us, that's something that he's waited a long time for. I mean, to me, that was a huge moment as well. But all these guys, you know, I hardly ever sit down during games, and I can remember sitting down in seventh inning and watching Huddy throw his glove, fire his glove, and then just kicking everybody up on the field what they were doing. You know, him throwing his glove, Soto, you know, getting down on one knee. Just everybody, Zim, you know, jumping up and down, his hands up. It was something that I'll never forget.
Now, Joe Torre told me years ago that the coolest thing about being the manager of a championship team, in some respects, is when you go to spring training the following year and you begin to see some of your peers and bump into some of your peers. How was that for you this spring?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, like I said, you know, something that you're proud of. You work your whole life to get to that moment, and it happens, and now all of a sudden you're world champs, and you go around to, you know, seeing different guys, saying hello to guys again, and you know, they're congratulating you still, and they're talking to you, and you know, especially to, you know, what we did and where we started from. I mean, it was just an amazing year. If you look at it through and through, one, it's really hard to believe. And two, the persistence that our guys had to stay, you know, to stay in the fight, as we say, all year long, to do what they did, man, I'm very proud of that group.
Have you ever thought about how many times you were standing at the end of that the plank, and how you survived every time?
Man, I had that long rope.
Oh my. Well, as you do your landscaping on this property, maybe you should save a spot for that foul pole, Davey.
Hey, I got a spot for it. I got a perfect spot for it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking some time and sharing some memories and helping to distract us from what's going on right now.
All right, Buster. Hey, you stay safe. Everybody out there, stay safe. Stay at home. Can't wait to get back.
Todd Bradham. The chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist. His work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website at toddradom.com. Todd, we just had that interview with Dave Martinez. It was so much fun, and I've never heard of anyone wanting a piece of a foul pole, but it makes sense that he would want it, but it certainly raises a lot of questions.
I love it. I mean, it begs some questions, no doubt about it. But, I mean, I think it's totally warranted, number one. It's a signature thing. But I can't help but think, what do you do? Do you, like, slice it up like a big salami and just distribute the rings? I could picture that in Dave Martinez's den, just kind of sitting there, right? I mean, I would totally do it. Take it down, put a new one up, no question.
Yeah, and based on what we learned about his carpentry skills, I could see it being like a – you know, part of a corner of a closet or something like that. Hey, what's that? That's an unusual color for that. Oh, that's just part of the foul pole that Howie Kendrick hit back in the 2019 World Series.
Buster, I mean, you're not thinking here.
Okay.
It's the base of a coffee table. You put a glass on top of it, and you got a coffee table, and that's the best guy. And you could even fill it with stuff. I mean, because, right, you've got a void in there.
Yeah, could do that. You know, another thing you could do if you really wanted to be really gaudy about it, and Dave mentioned to us before we started that he has hundreds of acres, you could have, like, the flagpole out in front of your house actually be the foul pole. What do you think?
You could totally do that. I mean, it might take some footing and some construction here. A foul pole is a pretty heavy object, I can tell you that. But, yeah, I say, you know, as long as we have this void in our normal lives and some time to do things, let's think creatively. Do it. Absolutely.
Before we get some ballpark talk, I want to ask you about the story that June Lee, our colleague here at ESPN, had this morning about a video game league that's going to start up involving players from each of the 30 teams. It makes sense that they would do something like this, Todd.
Totally. I mean, I think that, just the first things first, we need content. We need something to occupy our time as we wait this out. And if you think about it, Buster, it really does dovetail with an initiative that MLB has been concerned with for years, and that is to appeal to a younger audience. So from a marketing perspective, it is a no-brainer. It allows the players to have their personalities come through a little bit. I think it's a win-win. Totally.
Yeah, and I think that bettors will focus on the youngest player. That's who I would pick. I don't even know who's – you know, I went through the names loosely in there, but I would always bet on the younger participant. What do you think?
You never know. You might – you know, wily veterans. A lot of time on the road, too. You know that. And guile and old age sometimes wins the day. You and I can speak to that personally. We'll see how you do on the quiz this year with Taylor, see if that holds true. But, yeah, you know.
Yeah, well, I can speak from experience. When I play my 15-year-old son Jake in video games, I have no chance. And he's doing things with a control. I just give up and go out and mow the lawn or do something like that. All right, let's talk. Before we get to the quiz, let's talk about the ballpark you're presenting this week, which is down in Atlanta.
We are finishing up the NL East this week, Buster. We're talking about Truist Park. Truist Park, formerly SunTrust Park. Home of the Atlanta Braves, and as was the case with the Marlins Park last week, we won't talk about the tortured bonding of this place, why it exists, where it does, just from a fan and an aesthetic experience. I think this is one of these things, it's very similar to me to going to Las Vegas. I think it's testament to the ingenuity of man. It's amazing. They created something from absolutely nothing. It's like a little city there. It is a real estate project that happens to have a ballpark. I actually do like it. I think that it's really interesting, the fact that there is a little city around it. I actually know people who work for the Braves who live steps away from the ballpark. It's very strange. And just lastly, I would say from fan experience, it is it's actually a great place to see a game. There are no bad seats. You know, the cantilevers, the rakes there, basically give you a very, very good viewing experience. I love the Hank Aaron home run display. I've been there a few times. I was actually there for a conference of sports design people last spring. So I got to spend 3 days on site in and around in that battery complex. Antico Pizza. We were talking about pizza before we started recording here. You know, I think it's a pretty good experience. Let's hear your thoughts.
Yeah, 100%. I've only been there a couple of times now, but I absolutely love the feel for it. And I love going to the ballparks where even if you were to just drop someone into the place, that you would have a strong sense of what team that it's attached to. Like that is the home of the Braves. And there's so much about that franchise in that ballpark. And I think the food there is great. I spent last year, I was walking around my son is a Braves fan. And so I walked around the entire ballpark perimeter looking for a particular sweatshirt that he's trying to get of the Braves. And I got to see all the different places. Man, there is a wide variety of food places to choose from.
Yeah. And we've talked over the last couple of weeks about ballparks that have a difficult time breaking through without some sense of place. We talked about Citi Field and Citizens Bank Park, which are in the middle of parking lots. Well, this doesn't have that problem.
No.
Really defined sense of place. And it's kind of interesting because they brought that chop house out in right center field, essentially over from Turner Field. So you've got continuity from the last ballpark to this one. And like I said, I really, you know, aside from the fact that it's kind of difficult to get to, I'm a pedestrian kind of guy. I'm a New Yorker. I have walked from a hotel across that bridge, across the highway to the ballpark. Not a fun thing in the middle of summer in Atlanta, but I give it really high marks. I think it's a good place to see a game.
Yeah, I'm lobbying the next time we have a Sunday night baseball game there that we all stay at the Omni with our production crew, which is basically right there.
Yeah. You can roll out and you're like right in there. So again, as we've been doing, I think we need to just have a quick rundown of Turner Field and Atlantic County, Fulton County Stadium. Turner Field, what a fleeting existence. I will say that I went to every World Series game in the history of that ballpark.
Wow.
Which is two games in 1999. And I went to the 2000 All-Star game. Amazing, Buster, when they built this place, which it was constructed to be the Olympic Stadium for the 96 Olympics, 85,000 seats. They downsized it, repurposed it. We pictured a lot more World Series and a lot more signature moments happening there.
Yeah, that was a grand statement. You totally threw me off there. It was like taking a curveball right over the middle when you was like, you saw every World Series game there. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. There weren't that many. I remember in Fulton County Stadium, the coldest that I've ever been anywhere was at the 19. I'm trying to remember what World Series it was. Was it 95? Might have been the 95 World Series, sitting up in the upper bowl in the auxiliary press box. And the wind was whipping through there. Man, that was cold. But that ballpark, you talk about a place built for pitching. You know, so many of the new ballparks that came in the 90s, you know, that like Camden Yards, 364 out to left center field. It was the distance, according to some of the Oriole pitchers. And they actually thought it was closer to 350. But Turner Field, when that opened, it was like, wow, that is a canyon. And what a great place if you have John Smoltz and Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine on your staff.
No question about it. And I was at jumping around Atlanta Fulton County Stadium when the Braves won their lone World Series during that great run in 1995. An electric atmosphere. And I remember going to the postgame reception and having the most 1995 moment imaginable at the celebration where 1995 heroes Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish, Newt Gingrich, Ted Turner, and Jane Fonda. So that is 1995 right there.
I thought you were going to mention Halle Berry, too, who was like, I think at that point, either dating David Justice or maybe they were married, but she would have been in there, too. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, guys, here we go. One of the reasons that this team's nickname was officially selected was due to the fact that, quote, it has a brevity that will delight headline writers. Is this team the Twins, the Rays, the Angels, or the Mets? Selected because the name had a brevity that will delight headline writers. Twins, Rays, Angels, Mets.
Wow. Oh, boy. Taylor, you want to take a shot? You got last week's one, right?
I think I'm going to nail this one. I'm going Mets. That sounds like a very old-timey newspaper thing to think about, especially because they are formerly the Metropolitans, so... That sounds like some forward thinking back in whenever the Mets were created. So I'm going D.
I'm going to go. And it's funny. You're basing it on where you're guessing journalism was at that time and where clubs were thinking. I'm going to say Rays, that in some respect, besides the word devil being in Devil Rays, I'm going to say that part of the reason why they shortened it was, not only get rid of the word devil, but also to make it more headline friendly.
Taylor wins the day because it was absolutely the Metropolitans. Buster, 1998. When did the Rays became the Rays in before the 2008 season? What are you thinking here?
I was trying to be, you know, I was going to let him stand on his own one. That was my initial one. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be different. I'm going to take a different shot. And the Rays were totally at that point trying to rebrand it. And maybe I wondered if you caught some obscure passage in one of Mark Topkin's stories from Rays executives. Okay, cut me a break here.
and it could have been the Twins, 1961. I mean, you know, well, all right. Congratulations, Taylor. Good job.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. No, I wasn't going to go the Twins because that felt like, nah, that wasn't related to headlines. That was totally related to the Twin Cities. That was an easy one, right?
Well, now you're thinking.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Todd. Right.
Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. First up here, our guy Kevin Mallory Music at Kevin Mallory TX. He passes along a question from at Baseball Brit, saying he wants to hear Buster's most controversial baseball opinion.
Yeah, I'm not in the same place where a lot of traditionalists are when it comes to extra innings. I've evolved over time. I used to always have fights with Boog Ciambi about how, you know, I love the 18-inning games. And now as time has gone on, I'm like, no, they have to stop that. And I think what convinced me was game three of the 2018 World Series, which was 18 innings between the Red Sox and the Dodgers. And it was colossally boring. And I was trying to put myself in the place of fans who are watching games like that. And I think that anytime you go beyond like 10, 11, 12 innings, you know that fans begin to drift out of the ballpark. You know, people are turning it off and, you know, players can't stand it. So as time has gone on, I do agree with the efforts to truncate extra innings.
Yeah. Like, do we want to see the first baseman who maybe threw a couple pitches back in high school get on the mound? What are you in favor of, the put a runner on second move that they do in the World Baseball Classic?
Something. They need to do something. And I do think that there should be a max. And I don't know if that's 12. And by the way, this is for regular season only. In the postseason, that's different. But in the regular season, I do think you need to have a max, kind of like you do, you know, in the NFL, where you're going to play an overtime period, but you're not going to just play indefinitely. Same thing with hockey, obviously. They've adjusted their rules as well.
What about, how do you feel about ties? I feel like that would upend records and all that, but.
Yeah, I think you gotta do it like hockey. You gotta find a way to get a winner and a loser from that day, even if you were to assign various points.
Next up, Brian Simpson at BSimp120274. He writes in, from top to bottom, which Marlins team do you think was better, 1997 or 2003?
I think 97, look, 2003, a lot of those guys went on to have amazing careers. Josh Beckett, for example, being a, you know, someone who had a long career. But that 97 team had stars. Like, it had a lot of great established players, and it was obviously a terrible thing after that season was over. They basically unloaded the entire team as the owner was trying to save money.
Paris Parker at Paris_Matthew writes in, not a question, more so a, hey, let's point this out here. Referring to your Bleacher Tweets from Wednesday, I can't believe you forgot about Ryan Zimmerman as Mr. National. I'm a diehard Cardinal fan and remember that. And I think he does have a point. I don't think it was as much a you forgot, but just something that we hadn't covered yet.
Nah, I don't feel as bad about that one as they do about Mr. Cub,
yeah,
right? I mean, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks, that was a bad one. Ryan Zimmerman, I don't think Ryan Zimmerman's going around signing Mr. National.
Yeah, probably
gotten
not.
To know Ryan through the years. No, I don't see that.
Doesn't seem like his style. Last one for today, Steve Banton at SBanton16 writes in, how would you feel about interviewing one of your favorite or well-known umpires to get their take on the current downtime, including how they're being compensated, some intriguing stories from the past? Steve, we might have some things in the hopper here. You could be in luck on this.
I would agree with that. I would, Steve, don't be surprised at some point if we wind up doing that. We're not going to do it next week, but next week, man, we have a lineup ready to go. Hall of Fame week, we're touting it as. We're going to have Hall of Famers, and this list is not totally confirmed, but for now, we know we're going to get Jim Palmer, we're going to get Mike Messina, we're going to get George Brett and others. It is going to be a phenomenal week. I can't wait.
That'll do it for Bleacher Tweets for this week. And a quick, another shout out to our guy, Steve Banton, who wrote in saying that he works in an ER and he's been working 12-hour shifts and he really appreciates the podcast. So we appreciate his hard work and the hard work of all the medical workers, first responders, people at grocery stores, all you folks who are grinding through this and listening to the pod. We appreciate what you're doing for us.
Yeah. And Steve, it's funny. You would be the perfect person for something like this. My suggestion to some baseball executives is whenever baseball returns, that folks who worked in the front lines at hospitals, they should have free admission. Like, let them into sporting events. Go ahead, be honored. I remember after 9/11, how, you know, so many policemen and Port Authority officers and first responders, firemen were honored at ballparks. I feel like that we need people from hospitals out at ballparks being honored as games start. You know, I echo Taylor's thoughts. Thank you very much for everything that you're doing. And thanks to everybody for listening this week. Thanks today to Dave Martinez, to Todd Radom, and to Taylor. Have a great weekend, everybody, and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.